Guess what? We are living through an era like no other in history. Therefore, predicting the future based on comparisons to bygone eras won't work. And I'm going to tell you why in podcast 826, the Bob Davis Podcasts. So before I started, I got my coffee and just had a fantastic steak. And I work at home, so I don't worry too much about being injured at work. But what if you are injured at work or when you are playing? Do you handle the insurance and workers' comp claims by yourself, or do you get somebody who is an expert in these areas? And the guy I'm talking about is John D. Scott of Hoffman, Hamer & Associates. First of all, John is a great personal injury lawyer. He works with clients. He also works with companies to make sure that their insurance covers their employees properly. But if you have been injured, you want to put John's number aside because someday when you are, or if you have been injured and you're lost in this thicket of filing claims or arguing with your employer, you want to call him. It's 952-683-1351. Once again, John D. Scott, great personal injury lawyer, 952-683-1351. It's true that an accident usually comes without any warning, especially when you're having fun and not thinking about a catastrophe. John often shares examples with clients that he has had. And I mean, it goes from people being caught in revolving doors, even today, to people being injured while water skiing, or people that get hit while they're working and they're driving a company car or rental, you know, all kinds of things that can happen that are completely unpredictable, black swan events that cause you to be injured. These days, you need help navigating the maze of insurance benefits, medical bills, and workers' comp, because you know how the medical bills go. You know, your insurance might cover some of it. Your company's insurance might cover some of it. They might say that they're not going to cover you. You need representation, and that is John D. Scott of Hoffman, Hamer & Associates. 952-683-1351. 952-683-1351. Here's what you do. Look for John D. Scott's picture at the top of the page at the BobDavisPodcast.com. That takes you to jdsinjurylaw.com. That's his website, and they have a contact page there for you to share the details of your problem with John D. Scott, personal injury attorney at Hoffman, Hamer & Associates, and good luck. First, you might say to yourself, well, why does this matter? The idea for this podcast stems from stories and posts and videos and comments that I am seeing from self-proclaimed pundits and real pundits, academics, and others comparing 2019 and 2020 to many other periods in world history and U.S. history. We're supposedly politically polarized, so it's like the years right before the Civil War in America. We face flashpoints in Syria and Turkey, in the rest of the Middle East or Africa or potentially Europe, so it's like that period of time right before World War I from 1910 or so up to 1914. If the stock market goes down too fast, the obvious comparisons to 1929 or Black Friday back in the 80s come in a flurry in the financial media and on the news. And then we get into the politics even more. Academics have compared our time politically to the founding era, the early 1800s for the fight between Thomas Jefferson and John Adams. President Trump has been compared to President Andrew Jackson, who, as far as I can tell, was nothing like Trump. The era of President James Buchanan right before the election of Abraham Lincoln is also compared to our own. Hence, you're getting all of these, well, we're going to have a civil war because it's just like it was in the 1850s. And yes, they compare Trump to the Lincoln presidency as well. And let's not forget Andrew Jackson, because, you know, he was impeached. So Rutherford B. Hayes won the Electoral College, but not the popular vote back in the day in 1876. So somehow our time is echoing the 1870s. Of course, the Depression era, because in 2016, there were elements that could tip the country into chaos, like the Depression in the early 1930s. You're getting the idea. And they're a little political. Some academics have even compared Trump to George Wallace, the governor of Alabama, who ran for president in 1976 and was shot and paralyzed in an assassination attempt in Maryland. And I remember that well because we used to go to that shopping center, and there was a spot that everybody knew, because if you watch the television coverage of the assassination attempt of George Wallace, you know, we used to go there and stand on that parking spot. And I'll never forget the guy's name. It was Arthur Bremmer was the guy that I think shot Wallace. Then they compare Trump to Nixon because he was almost impeached and, you know, hilarity ensues. Scientists and business writers say this era most resembles the 1920s because of nationalism and idealists at odds. My favorite is a very popular tendency to compare the United States to the fall of the Roman Empire. And yeah, I could go on, but I'm not going to. I think it would distract listeners from the main point here, which is why do we do this? Well, the same reason people ask you whether or not you're a Democrat or Republican, if you live in the city or the suburbs, or in most towns, hey, where'd you go to high school is the first question they ask. And if you didn't go to high school there, well, that's another thing entirely. Suddenly they don't know how to categorize you because it is easier to deal with people in situations when you can categorize, when you can put people in a box. And we categorize by stereotype using a widely held but fixed and oversimplified image of an idea, thing, or person. Even the most balanced people do this. They put people, things, and especially ideas in a box where you stay once you have been classified because it's easier for human beings to figure out whether or not they should take flight or attack or what to do about something if it looks like something else that they are familiar with. One of my favorite things is to take an idea that, say, a progressive Democrat has espoused or an idea and an idea Donald Trump espouses and flip him. So when you're with Trump supporters, you repeat the idea of the progressive, but say Trump said it and see what they say, and then you do that with progressives. It's really fun. Analysts, pundits, and axe grinders and charlatans all use stereotypes, sometimes pretty subtly, to build their predictions on. And in our time, in our media, predictions are important. They are the stuff of ratings. So when you say we're going to have a civil war and you have a certain stature in the media, people listen to you and you get headlines and you get invited to talk shows and you can write books about your theory. And it doesn't matter if it ill serves people. It doesn't matter if it's dangerous. It doesn't matter if it doesn't contribute to the solution of any issues that divide people. What its value is this prediction. And we're going to talk about how that warps and twists our perceptions and our ability to respond to what I see as completely unique developments in the world today and in the United States as well. We're going to talk about those in the second half of this podcast. One of the great things about technology is payment processing. I'm not kidding. There's a revolution in business today because of payment processing, because clients can pay more easily and businesses can get paid faster, and that is what it's all about. So I want to recommend a payment processor I've been using. They're great. They can work with QuickBooks. I use them. I have a ReliaFund button on my website at thebobdavispodcast.com. ReliaFund, R-E-L-I-A-F-U-N-D. ReliaFund is a payment processor that has been providing integrated solutions to get payments cleared for more than two decades. In fact, they were at the forefront of the payment processing revolution because they started doing this 20 years ago before a lot of companies were doing it. If you're developing an e-commerce website, they do answer the phone. If you're building back office stuff for clients, they do answer the phone. You will talk to actual human beings, no long-term contracts, secure, technology-focused. Here's the number, 866-243-5040. That's 866-243-5040, or check them out online at ReliaFund.com or click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com. So I think if you really look at it, there's really nothing that compares to the current time frame in history. Now, that's kind of a big statement to make, and you'll see why I'm saying it when we get down here towards the end of this podcast. It certainly could be true of other eras. I don't know that there was so much comparison in past eras of history as there is today, but especially eras that were considered turning points, I'm not sure that they realized that they were living in a time that was essentially a turning point where new ideas, new things were coming in that were completely unpredictable, if you will, black swan events that were not predicted. So everybody likes to predict stock market crashes and, you know, things are going to happen and this is going to happen and that's going to happen. And they'll say that's a black swan event. Like the attacks on 9/11 was something no one really was prepared for mentally, or they just didn't. No one would ever think that someone would fly a plane into a building, and some people call that a black swan event. Except people did predict it, and some people warned about it. A black swan event really pertains to markets when markets collapse because of something that was unpredictable. So the 2008 housing crisis was relatively unpredictable because nobody realized what was in the tranches of the mortgages that were at risk. And they didn't realize how big of an exposure the hedge funds and the banks had to these loans. So that has been referred to by, I think, what's his name, Nassim Taleb, as a quote-unquote black swan event. So a black swan event is unpredictable. It blindsides you. And so those are events that people, they're trying to say, well, if we look at the history of the Roman Empire, we can see that this is going to happen. And no, a black swan event is completely unpredictable. And I do think, though, that our time is characterized, and I think these are the things that we should be looking at, because these are, to me, bellwethers, and they suggest other kinds of problems that we need to address. I don't know if there's a time in history that compares to it, but I don't think we're looking at those things, which is why I'm talking about this. Our time is characterized by the decay and collapse of, I was going to say so many, but I'm just going to say many institutions that have existed for decades, centuries, millennia, really. And I'm not sure these institutions really serve any purpose anymore, but they're still around and they function almost by momentum. We are certainly ill-served by religious institutions, although I have nothing against religion per se, and that's not, I'm not grinding a religious act, but I wonder about these huge mainline churches and what value they actually are adding. And of course, any analysis of the current time frame would be wrong if we didn't mention that there are governments worldwide whose people no longer trust them or have any faith in them. And the United States is one of those countries where some of the faith in government and the belief in government in this country is starting to teeter. And we have borders across the world which seem to be easily breached by so-called undesirable poor people from the so-called undesirable undeveloped world who are seeking a better life in the so-called developed world. Now, I'm not passing judgment on that, but countries all over the world are having problems keeping their borders from being penetrated by these people. Institutions a few short years ago which seemed cast in stone, like traders on the floor of a stock or options exchange, had been replaced by computers in the blink of an eye. Media institutions, I talk about this all the time, whole industries which seemed indestructible are shadows of their former selves, and new companies, new approaches, new platforms, new pursuits, and new tools coming out are catching the imaginations of millions and generating massive pools of money because they are so unique. We now carry more computing power in our hands than in 1980, probably only existed, if then, in university labs. And some of the things that we are carrying in our hands, kids, you know, the new iPhones or the new Samsung phones, and when we get to 5G, it's going to be the same thing. The conception of what these machines, and that's what they are, can do, we hold in the palm of our hands. And, you know, literally less than 30 years ago, these things weren't even conceptualized. But it's more than that. Let's look at some statistics. And I mean, I could go on and on with statistics in this podcast, and I don't want to do that. I just want to kind of set the table here. So the 13 colonial governments in America, how many people do you think lived in the 13 colonial governments in America? So this was from north to south in 1776, just 2.5 million people lived in this part of the world, and many of them were in servitude. Today, we have nearly 8 billion people living on the planet. A little more than 100 years ago, it was just under 1.5 billion. Again, 8 billion people on the planet now. Just under 100 years ago, it was 1.5 billion people all over the planet. So you had huge portions of the planet that were hardly even inhabited. If you think of 1.5 billion, think of Brazil today and think of the population of Brazil 100 years ago or 200 years ago. 200 years ago, only the United States could claim somewhere around 50% of its population living in urban areas. The rest of the world didn't even chart. The world population in 1800 was 1 billion people. China, Jing China, was the largest population on Earth with about 260 million people, which would have been that dynasty at the time. The British Empire at that time only had about 100 million people total, and the United States had just over 5 million people in 1800, or roughly 200 years ago, total. Qatar, which is a country that we hear, you know, Qatar is a developing country in the Middle East, and you know, it's extremely wealthy and they're doing all kinds of things. They had just 16,000 people in Qatar 200 years ago. Latin America has 636 million people today, with concentrations of populations in some very small countries like El Salvador. Brazil has 200 million people. Colombia has more than 46 million people. And you wonder why some of these people from these very small, underdeveloped, very poor countries are trying to come to the United States. So that's a problem that's happening because there are large urban populations growing in all these different parts of the world, whether it's Africa, Asia, or Latin America. And there's nothing for them to do because the economic development hasn't necessarily kept pace with the growth of the population. So in other words, when you think of New York City as 15 million people, New York City's 15 million people live in relative luxury compared to the ghettos in Brazil where millions of people live. So it's an interesting thing to think about. So then a list of things that could potentially cause chaos is pretty amazing today. Air travel, as you know, can be a weapon or a very efficient method of spreading dangerous communicative diseases rapidly. One of the problems with fungal, the growth of fungal diseases or the growth of Ebola is if we have a very large outbreak of Ebola or the flu, it will be transmitted across the world relatively quickly, as in 24 hours to a week if there is a killing flu. And we've had them before, and we will have them again, where you have a flu that has the potential of killing 70% of the population. That will move rapidly across the world, and no one will be able to stop it. Here's another one. Small, unstable, and unpredictable nations that have chemical weapons and nuclear weapons and the delivery systems, which at any time could be used without reserve, which would literally change the world in a blink of an eye. Social media, as we've talked about, has the power in the right hands to destabilize any country, no matter how developed or underdeveloped. If you doubt me, look at the United States in 2016, look at the Ukraine, look at Egypt. Water, Egypt back in when Obama was president, when was that, 2009 or 10 or something like that, when Egypt was destabilized because of the Arab Spring? Water, food, infrastructure, economy, and social conditions are critically more important these days than ever before because we have so many people who need things. 200 years ago, nobody really cared about water. It was important in the West, and it was important in terms of development. If a town upriver dumped waste in the river, then it might be an issue. But now it's a question of, do we have enough water, right? So water, infrastructure, economy, social conditions, critical because they can create highly unstable situations that kill lots of people rapidly. And still, we have many of these institutions that were founded at the dawn of the nuclear era in 1945, the Cold War era and the post-Cold War and the post-nuclear era, and even some of those founded at the close of World War I, at the turn of the 20th century, basically. We still have these institutions. And no one really ever says, do we, you know, there's a little bit, but nobody really questions the United Nations or NATO or some of these regimes, trade regimes and things that date back to the 1940s, banking regimes and things of that nature. Do they still work? Do we still need them? Do we still need the kinds of things that we needed, 50 years ago? Then there are mental concepts based on scientific ideas that are more than 100 years old that we are living in the past out here in the rest of America when you're dealing with theories of quantum physics that literally the internet operates on. So computers operate on quantum theories, and some of those are much newer than Einstein's theory of relativity or Heisenberg's theory of uncertainty or any of these things. So the bottom line is things move fast and they are speeding up, and it is sometimes difficult to even determine if something people say is a problem is a problem, right? Especially in the scrim of the battles about whatever the issues are in our media and social media that feels more and more and more like an effort to destabilize our population, where you don't know which end is up and you don't know what is propaganda and you don't know what is truth because there is no single arbiter of truth anymore. These are all artifacts of the mass shootings, the revolutions across the world. The border issues are symptoms They are not actual things. The greater symptoms are the things that policy needs to address, and we don't talk about those things. One of the most significant things to have ever happened on Earth was the Industrial Revolution. It's been suggested, and I was shocked to read this, that even the father of free market economics, Adam Smith, really did not grasp that he lived in Britain at the very beginning of the first flush of the Industrial Revolution. He didn't realize he was actually living through a revolution in the way products were made and consumed when he wrote his books on economics. So when people compare our current era to some bygone era, I think that they are missing a lot. And so the question would be, well, what are they missing, Bob? Why don't you tell us? And I would just say, the question is, what don't we know, rather than what we think we do know? Because I think more and more, it's what we don't know that is the most dangerous thing. So what don't we know? And I would express these questions to you, because these are the things you need to run down in your head. What don't you know about water and access to water and the you know, the purity of water worldwide? What don't you know about food and food production you know, crops and agriculture and agriculture output and trade and farmers technology as it's applied to agriculture? What don't I know about explosive urban growth, where you have cities in Africa that are bigger than New York City, that have completely different standards of living in, let's say, than Beijing or Shanghai or New York or Chicago? And Shanghai and Beijing, not too long ago, like 25 years ago, had very low standards of living versus what it's like to go visit those cities today. And that includes other cities across the area of China, you know, central southern China from Beijing to Kunming, where the standard of living has been expanded and lifted, you know, really exponentially in the last 30 years only. What don't we know about communicable diseases, all kinds of diseases? What don't we know about privacy and the effects of social media? What don't we know about migrations of an animal called the human being due to a lack of opportunity, due to starvation, due to war and pestilence? People are very upset about the southern border of the United States, and I often say to people, wait till the war in Venezuela starts because of the breakdown and failure of the government in Venezuela, which at one time, not too long ago, like 20 years ago, was the richest country in Latin America and still has the largest oil reserves in the world. But the government of Venezuela has so ruined, literally killed the goose that laid the golden egg, that it would take years to bring all of those oil production facilities back online to save the country. So that's an interesting – that's a failure of government more than anything. The people didn't change. The people aren't less intelligent. The people didn't do anything. There wasn't a tornado or an earthquake, or – there's earthquakes all the time, but you know what I mean. There wasn't some mass die-off or anything else. It was a change in approach to government that has produced the situation in Venezuela, which threatens to destabilize all of Latin America. What do we do about that? What about technology advances in making war and the weapons of war? If you want to see a video, just go on YouTube and type in "many drones of war," and you will see a video that was made that is a dramatization, but it is a picture, or it's a, you know, a video, moving video of a plane like a C-130 flying over a battlefield and releasing killer drones, millions of killer drones that then fly down and attack individuals without mercy. All on their own, internal communications and artificial intelligence that run these drones. So the planes release them and they are activated and they will attack until they kill everyone. I mean, that is a technology that exists. What about drones with nuclear weapons? Same thing. Or cyber hacking that turns off the power system. What about a potential of a sun flare in a solar minimum that dumps so much cosmic energy onto Earth that it causes people to get radiation poisoning and destroys the electrical system, including the internet? What about using social media to destabilize target countries? As I said earlier, that Russia did this in the Crimea and Ukraine just 5-6 years ago. What about electronic currencies and what that's what does that have the potential to do in terms of destabilizing markets? And one of the things that's really interesting is people always talk about we're not going to let American companies do this. We're going to keep money here in the United States. The fact is that by the time our creaky Congress gets around to doing something, or by the time a president issues an executive order, one single button transfers billions of dollars to the Netherlands or to Britain or to Denmark or someplace where it is safe from the sticky fingers of the American government or the Russian government or someone else's government. There's a lot of Chinese sending their assets to Vancouver and to Seattle to buy real estate or to invest in American markets and convert their money into dollars because they don't trust the Chinese government. The fact that technological advances owned by corporations are creating huge pools of wealth individually in the markets and in the companies themselves. And the big one, of course, is artificial intelligence and robotics, whether it's applied to white-collar jobs like receptionists, or whether it is applied to systems, or whether it's applied to platforms like Facebook. You know, I mentioned in one of the podcasts I did recently, Facebook just 5 years ago was perceived as the darling of the tech industry. It was literally a peerless reputation. And today, Facebook is really faltering. For a period of time, the Ford Motor Company was, the only game in town when it came to cars. And Henry Ford's son, Edsel, fought with him because Henry Ford believed that the Model T was the perfect automobile and needed no future iteration. And Edsel is the one that convinced Henry Ford that he needed to build the Model A, which was a tour de force. The Model A and then later the Ford V8 were huge advancements. But by the 1950s, General Motors had surpassed Ford as the largest corporation in the world, and we all know how that went. So I'm sure Henry Ford was furious that General Motors was able to do that. But if you had been living in 1929, you would have thought there was no – that the Ford Motor Company would be number one for forever. And it was only number one again for maybe 20 years before General Motors figured out a way to do a better job, make better cars. And now, of course, Ford is back, I guess you could say. But I think it's very interesting. These companies come and go. And this isn't even a complete list. So these are unprecedented times. It's far beyond the first flight or the telephone or the factory assembly line, because the systems that we're creating are substantially larger and substantially more disruptive than an aircraft or a telephone. And they are creating a new world. And all these little things, whether it's artificial intelligence, robotics, as applied to farming or as applied to technology or as applied to factories or anything else, are contributing to the creation of a new world. The disruptors in the late 19th century and early 20th century were first flight, the telephone, the factory assembly line, and the assembly, manufacturing through the Industrial Revolution of consumer products like the first refrigerators or the first washing machines, that kind of thing. They weren't as disruptive as the things that are being created new. So the new things now, artificial intelligence and things of that nature, have the potential to put whole demographics out of work across the world. And we have to think about the potential effects of those. When you compare America to the fall of the Roman Empire, which, by the way, Roman democracy ended with Caesar, but the Roman Empire went on for nearly 1,000 years. Actually, it was 1,000 years after that. So to suggest that, this is the end for everyone because something happens here, there, or everywhere, it doesn't – because things are disrupted is not necessary. I'm not voting for the end of democracy, but I'm saying that it's something that people need to be aware of. So finally, some further questions. Do we need governments? Do we need borders? Do we need states? Do we need companies? And how do we protect those things? How do we make those things work for the people given these new developments. What are we going to do for work in 30 years? So, you know, we've already talked about how millennials and baby boomers don't have enough money for retirement. Why do people have to retire? The original idea of retirement and Social Security was to get people who were in their 60s out of the workforce because they wanted to keep those jobs open for others. But yet today, an individual's footprint can be worldwide if they know how to use technology. How do we farm? How do we market? How do we build towns and cities? How do we avoid losing freedoms with these things? And these questions are not being answered and, to a large extent, not even worked on because we're too busy clouding our minds with bad comparisons to the Roman Empire, the 1920s New York, or the 1950s in rural America. Listen, we're living through a time unlike anything before, and it's time we started to realize that. Now, one of the things about the future that's also so great that we live in, that used to be in the past, this was the future. Civil aviation is just blowing up, and aviation is growing and growing. And if you're a pilot and you want to be safe when you fly, then you want Alpha Systems Angle of Attack Indicator, because the Alpha Systems AOA saves lives. So here's what you do. Click on the Alpha Systems banners for more information about Alpha's revolutionary Angle of Attack Indicator, because it's an indicator that sits on your dash on the plane that shows you how much lift your wing is producing. And in civil aviation, it's the final turns usually that cause the biggest problems, because pilots think they can feel how much lift the wing is producing. And maybe you can, and maybe you can't. But if you dump, you don't have time to recover, and that is why Alpha Systems AOA saves lives. Click on that banner at the top of the page and check out Alpha Systems at the EAA Air Show in Oshkosh this summer. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts on iTunes, Spotify, TuneIn, blogtalkradio.com, Spreaker.com, Stitcher.com, Google Play, Music.com, Tuned In, and Tuned In works with Alexa. In fact, I was checking my analytics, and I am now seeing these devices like Alexa taking up a larger and larger share. So people want to know, how do I get your podcast with Alexa? It goes to TuneIn, but you just say search for the Bob Davis Podcasts.com. It finds it and you're off and running. Appreciate the likes and the shares and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter. And I do appreciate donations for Mobile Podcast Command and the Bob Davis Podcasts.com. Thanks for listening to Podcast 826. We're living in a new world unlike anything before. Stop trying to compare it to past eras.
Hush not, child, and don't cry. Your folks might understand you by and by. Just move on up toward your destination. Though you may find from time to time complications. And take the trip. Though there may be wet road ahead and you cannot slip, just move on up, for peace you'll find. Into the steeple of beautiful people, where there's only one kind. So hush not, child.